Good morning. I am very thankful to come and speak with you today. We were given a chance to do a youth service a couple years ago, and they said we can do whatever we want, we can design it how we will. It was Dennis Bloodworth and myself. And they said that there's some exceptions to that. You can do it however you want, but we're going to give you the topic. And we said, that's fine, as long as we can kind of do some things. We'd love to just have the chance to have our weekend. So we're going to give you a topic. It's going to be one of the parables. We love parables, so that's great. He said, it's going to be the parable of the 10 virgins. And I don't know, was anybody there at that service? You remember that a couple years ago? I think that was the only time I've ever heard a sermon on the 10 virgins, and I don't think anybody has preached that since Jesus preached it like 2,000 years ago, so I felt like they were just kind of throwing us under the bus with that one, but we had a great time anyways. It was a privilege to speak then, and even more of a privilege now because we had a little bit more flexibility to what we teach on today. And we wanted to talk to you about teenagers. I've been a youth pastor at CCV for about 7 years working with the teens. I became a Christian at this church while I was a student in junior high and high school, and so this is my home. This is my church family. The youth ministry is what I've known for a really long time, and it's an honor and a privilege to serve here and to be a part of it. It's a great weekend to come and talk about teens, something I'm very passionate about. Teens today have been labeled, if you get online and check out a couple sites, they call them the Generation Y. If you look on Wikipedia, they call them the Googlers or the YouTubers or the Millennials. They call them the virtual generation for obvious reasons that they love technology, but they love community and they love relationships, and they're trying to do that, and they usually use technology to bridge relationships and communication. Students today are constantly plugged in, they're online, they're trying to figure things out, they're technologically advanced. But they have no idea what a world would be like without cell phones or without digital cable or without internet, or without your debit cards, or Xbox 360s, or some other type of game console. They have no idea about that type of world. They've been around it a long time, and so that's mostly what they believe. And one of the main means of communication today is, as you know, is text messaging. Students today love text messaging. Their plan over the next couple of years is to phase out all verbal communication, pretty much just send messages to everybody. You don't ever have to talk, and it's going to be really great in the future. And fingers are going to start getting smaller so they can fit on the keyboards and stuff. And text messaging is huge. How many of you out there are text messengers? How many of you are text messaging right now? Put your hands down quickly. I'm going to stop. Yeah, most of the time, the text messaging thing, you kind of get onto it. How many of you just are avidly against it? You want nothing to do with text messaging. You think it's bad. Okay, that's fine too. We wanted to test your texting lingo knowledge, because it's constantly changing, and we're trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure it out myself, and so we thought we'd just find out how much you already know about the texting language. I feel like it's some type of modern-day Morse code or something. They throw out words, and I think they're making it up most of the time, and then everyone is just supposed to understand what it is. But we'll throw some things up on the screen, and you can say out loud if you're the service that talks out loud. You can go ahead and do that. We'll throw some of these. Some of them are easier. Obviously, it's been around since, like, forever. What was that one? I didn't hear it. No, that one. Okay, best friends forever. You got it. It's pretty simple. Go to the next one here. AYS. You know what that one is? Are you single? I don't think... Shows where you're at. I don't think that's it, but you can go ahead and use it like that. It's are you serious? Unreal. Next one. Is BRB, be right back. That's a pretty common one. Do some that are a little less common. I don't know, you know. Next one here is JK. Everyone knows the JK. And every time I hear that, even when adults put JK, I just hear students in that when they, you know, students say, just kidding. So whenever you text just kidding to somebody, that's what's heard is just kidding. Next one here. LOL, and I feel like, this is just a personal thing, I feel like it's an integrity thing if you don't technically laugh out loud, but you put that down, so pay attention to that, make sure that you're of right character, and then TTYL, talk to you later. I had a friend after the service last night that text messaged me, it was TTFN, I've never heard of that before, ta-ta for now, that's ridiculous. And it was a guy that sent me that, too. No guys say ta-ta for now. We'll put a couple more up here. W-Y-W-H. I don't even think this is real, but they put it up there anyways, and it's wish you were here. Isn't that nice? That's sweet. I know teenagers have no clue what that is. Obviously an adult or like way older adult that made that one up. And then the last one here, swack. Have you ever been swacked? You know what it is? What is it? Sealed with a kiss. Have you sent that one before? Yes, I have, he says. Well, obviously, text messaging is huge in today's culture and the way that we communicate, and teens obviously are embracing that. But what other things do we think about when we hear about teens? What are the things that you think about when you hear about teens? That trouble, he says right here. I can already feel like some of the groans and, oh, the teen years and some of the pain from that, and I can see some of your facial expressions. Teen years are pretty tough. Most of us experience some hard times in that, and we know that those years can be a struggle. But there are a lot of things that we characterize teens with. Some of it is trouble right there. But a couple of these we wrote down, and it's things that we label teens with. We'd say that teens typically are huge with friends. They want to be around people constantly, or they want to text people. They may not necessarily want to be around them. They want to be online. They want to be on video games. Reality is adults want to be on video games too. We got dads who are like addicted to Halo and stuff. We got iPods and MP3 players. There's movies. They love watching movies. Sports. Our students today are more active in sports and are getting better and better at sports from starting at like age 2. On up. They're active. Their clothes, we identify teenagers by their clothes. Most of the time, we don't like that. You know, we know that their pants are kind of sagging and guys are wearing girls' jeans and, you know, whatever they want to do. Obviously, the cell phones and text messaging are pretty big. But my question is, do we want to allow the society, do we want to allow our culture today, or the things that we're labeling right here, the stuff that's in style, to be what shapes a culture? Do we want those things to be the things that we identify with our teens? I want to see a generation that's different than that. I don't want that to be what we identify our teens with. I want to see something that is beyond that, that thinks beyond themselves. I want to see students who love God and follow Him and pursue Him relentlessly. I want to see students that love people graciously and students that stand up for truth uncompromisingly for Jesus. Don't you want to see a generation like that? Yep. When I think about teens, a couple of you do. Mercy clap. When I think about teens, I also think about their potential, and we see a lot of it. I see so many students with potential at CCV. And we have students that every week they sacrifice their reputation around their friends and at school to talk to their friends about Jesus and invite them to church. We have students that hold financial fundraisers for their friends to send them on missions trips to places like Africa and South America. We've got students that are constantly holding Bible studies at their schools, and they're leading them. The only adults that are in there are just monitoring the room. We have students, and they're a select few of high school kids, that are going into the downtown Phoenix area and passing out burritos to homeless people. I was asking some of our guys that did that and asked them what they were doing. They said that they call this ministry Burritos for Bums. I don't think it's the greatest thing you want to call it, but they have the right thing in mind. You know, their heart's in the right place. Teenagers have the capacity to change the world. They can be challenged and motivated to change their campuses and to take them for Christ. But that kind of activity, it's pretty rare. There's not a whole lot of that, and I wouldn't say that it's enough to where we can categorize students and say, this is what they're like yet, but we want to see that. And these things aren't necessarily bad. You know, the athletics and sports and technology, there's nothing inherently wrong with those things. But to be labeled by those things, I don't feel like that's what we want. That's what we're looking for. You know, we have students that are very athletically gifted. We've got students that are musically gifted and trained. Our band up here is rocking good. They're all high school students. Aren't they good? You know, we have students that pay close attention to grades. Some of them do that. You know, mostly it's us pressing them for that. We want good GPAs so they can get good SAT scores, so they can get good scholarships, go to good colleges down the road. And all of those things are fine, especially now when times are tough economically. We could really appreciate students that went to school for free. And we know that there are things that we want to say. Those things are great, But are they great if they don't know who they are according to Christ? If they can't live in a world that's aligned with the Spirit of God? If they can't sustain relationships with people because they've never been shown how? And if they can't navigate through the struggles of life without being crushed by them, then is it enough for them to be labeled like this? I don't feel that it is. And I think that something needs to change. And I feel that something needs to change with us. And it starts with us getting on the same page and thinking in the same terms, thinking in the same way. Do I have any parents in here of junior hires or senior hires, like the preteen, teenage years? Do you have any parents in here? Raise your hands. You have got to be involved. You have responsibility in this. This has to be something that you're coming alongside of. Do you have any teenagers that are in here? Any teenagers, raise your hand. You didn't come to the last service because it was too early, right? Yeah. You've got to be involved. You can't allow everybody else to shape you. You can't allow everybody else to make decisions for you. You've got to be involved. You've got to take ownership in that. And if we have any adults in here that have kids that are younger, or kids that are out of high school, and they're kids that are grown up, and they're gone, and then we have some adults that want nothing to do with kids whatsoever, you've got to take responsibility too. You've got to get involved. If you're a part of the body of Christ, I believe that everyone has to jump in. Everyone has to pitch in. This has got to be a team thing. It's got to be a church-wide thing that we see, and it's a perspective change. And it's a view that I feel that the Bible's very clear on, and it says it in a few cool ways. One of which is a story about Jesus, and he is talking to the masses. He just finishes communicating with them, and someone comes up to him and says, "Hey, Jesus, there's some people outside, and they want to talk to you. It's your mother and your sisters. Essentially, your family's outside. They want to speak to you." Jesus says, "Well, who is my family? Who are my mothers and brothers and sisters, and who's my family?" You know, and poor guy, he's just relaying a message, you know. They're there. They're outside. You know, it's not a trick question. That's your family out there. And Jesus responds and says, "You know who my family is? My family are the children of God. My family are the people that follow after the Father." And I don't think he was trying to erase what we understand as the traditional family. I don't think he was trying to eradicate the nuclear family, our households. I think what he was doing is he was blurring the lines between what we understand as a family at home, and what we understand as a family at church, this body of Christ, that there should be a little bit more unification. There shouldn't be so much of a, "This is my family, I raise them, I do this stuff," and at church other things take place. Those things have to be blended. I also believe that because it's something Paul said to Titus. In chapter 2, he says this essentially, and I'll summarize the passage. It's on your notes if you're following along. He essentially says that there's two things. I want to take the older men and the older women, and I want them to pay attention. I want them to pay attention to the things that they're teaching to make sure that it's aligned with correct doctrine, the Word of God. I want what they're teaching to be accurate, what they're saying to be accurate, and I want their lives to reflect that. I want their deeds to match up with their words. So that, this is the key, so that the younger generations will know how to live their lives following after God. They'll know how to raise their children, how to love their spouses, and how to make a difference in this world. I believe it was the design of God for the church to shape the church, for us to work in with our families and spiritually shape each other, and not just rely on our little pocketed families to do that and then hope for the best, because evidently it's not really working all that well when we do that, because we're not seeing a generation that's labeled the way that we want it to be labeled, so we've got to see things like that. So how do we shape a generation? We shape a generation first off when we decide as a church to be godly examples. 1 Peter says something pretty cool, and I think that it's a passage that we'd want to hang on to for memory. It says, "Be shepherds of God's flock to watch over those spiritually." How do we watch over those? And it gives a bunch of different things to watch over. And at the very end of that passage, it says, by being examples to the flock, watching over them, making sure that our lives are aligned so that the younger can also have lives that are aligned. How can we be examples? We can be godly examples first by our priorities. By our priorities, the things that we're spending our time on, things that we're spending our money on, our values, you know, our priorities, all the things that we value. Because the next generation, whatever we value, more than likely will carry on to the next one, and they're going to try to value the same things. And so if we value work, And work is valuable. We've got to make money. But if we are valuing work so much that we're working 15, 16 hours a day, 6 days a week to provide for the family, then our next generation is going to do the same thing so they can provide for their family because that's all they've known. We've got to be examples with our priorities. Secondly, we've got to be examples with our behavior. If we're going to be godly examples, we've got to be examples with our behavior, just the way that we live our lives. Back to what Paul said to Titus. He said that the words and the deeds have to match up, and that's really hard for us to do on a regular basis, that our words and our deeds are aligned, that what we're saying and that our actions are clear. And believe me, regardless of whether you have teenagers or not, they're following you. They're listening to you. They're watching you. The way that you treat the bagger at Fry's, you know, the way that you drive your car and yell to the other people as they cut you off, the way that you interact with people at the mall and at the bank, and with each other. They're watching us, that we can be examples with our behavior, and lastly, we can be examples with our spirituality, and I think it's primary. That we are living out our faith in such a way that it could be exemplified to everyone else. They can see the way that we love God. They can see the way that we're living out our faith so that they know it's not just lip service. They know that it's real and something that we're authentic with. They need to be able to see that. Those things have to be visible. We just can't keep it and privatize it. It's got to be something that's seen outwardly. You know, our attendance at church is pretty important, but our involvement at church is even more important because that's what they're going to do if they see what we're doing. You know, teens today, they're being taught by our culture and by our society that the ultimate to attain in life is happiness, that marital faithfulness is negotiable, that hypocrisy is acceptable, that personal significance is contingent on financial stability. I'll repeat that. That personal significance is contingent on financial stability. That what we make determines how good of a person now, happy we are. The truth is relative, and that sports and school success trump spiritual involvement. Now, hear me on that. And this is one that I just need to share with you. If I get the chance to do it, I'm jumping on it, and I have it, so I'm doing it. And I don't want any hate mail or anything like that on this one, so... I apologize in advance, but I don't want your emails. The parents of junior hires and senior hires teens, if I could just share with you something from my heart, and I don't mean any disrespect from this, but if being involved and being active in the youth ministry is an option, something is off. It should never be an option. It is a non-negotiable for our students to be involved in the youth ministry. We've got a ministry that's designed to reach them at their stage of life, with their walk and their struggles and the things that they're trying to figure out. We've got a ministry designed for that. We've got adults that are regularly there just to reinforce the things that you are trying to enforce at home, that are loving them and just trying to be another voice that they can hear. And then we have hundreds of teens that are there, that are in the same stage, going through the same things, that are walking around, and we're trying to help them to work together in a community so that when they get older, they can continue to do that without feeling dysfunctional. They can know how to interact and how to build relationships with people at the church, with their peers. That's a place that they can do that. So, you know, I don't want to keep beating that dead horse, but, I just encourage you, please try to get your students involved. We shape a generation ultimately by our example. Secondly, we shape a generation when we invest in teens' lives. When we invest in teens' lives. It says, open my heart. Hear my teaching, listen to the words of my mouth. You hear this in Jesus' words too. I open my mouths in parables. I utter hidden things from of old. What we have heard and known, what our fathers have told us, we will not hide them from their children. We will tell the next generation their praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and wonders he has done. Here's how you can invest in the next generation. You can invest first with our experiences. Just with the experience that you have had in life, you've got great stories. You've got some things that you've had to go through. Some are good, some are bad. Some have been huge mistakes. Those are great stories that God can use to help this next generation so they don't make the same mistakes. You can allow them to hear that, but they have to hear it nonetheless. They got to hear where you've been and what you've been going through. Secondly, you can invest with your time. It's a little bit harder to invest with our time because we know that we don't have a whole lot of that. Work and our own families and our own lives, and most of us are thinking right now, I got to get my own stuff together before I try to help other people. You know, I think God can use you. I know that you're under construction, as am I and as are we as a culture, but God can use you. just listening to them and hanging out, building relationships. Spending time, ultimately, is huge. You know, I don't remember a whole lot from what my father told me when I was a teenager. Kind of went in one ear and out the other. It's the way most teens are at times. But you know what I really remember about him? I remember the time he and I spent washing trucks outside. I remember the time he and I would spend at the lake wakeboarding. I remember the time that he and I would spend teaching me how to drive when I got my permit, and he's in the passenger seat, like white-knuckled, just scared for his life. And I remember when he and I would go across the country and drive to go take me to college, and we spent all that time together driving halfway across this country to do that. You know, time, when an adult spends it with teens, speaks volumes. Thirdly, it's to invest with your life. And this is the hardest one. It's ultimately pouring your life intentionally into someone else's life. You know, one of the reasons I'm a follower of Christ and a Christian today is because adults at CCV decided that I was important enough to invest in. They cared about me. And now I'm a follower, and I try to do the same thing, and I try to pour my life back into someone else. And I also want this ministry and the youth ministry that we have to do the same thing, and we're trying. One of the things that we're trying, and it's been going on for a little while, is a ministry called MOVE, where we ask students that are in junior high to pour their lives into students that are younger, into the third and fourth graders. And as those students both grow up and as they graduate into higher grades, they follow those students up. And so, in theory, the junior higher will follow the third and fourth grader up all the way until they get into high school. Can you imagine? Those years are tough as it is, but to have someone that cares about you, some cool teenager that's just investing in your life, is concerned about you, that's just checking in on you. I've got two kids of my own. I cannot wait. It gives me chills to think about some other teenagers from this church that are just going to pour their lives into my kids. It's just amazing. We have that ministry called MOVE. We also have our youth coaches that regularly just pour their lives into students. They do it on a Saturday night and a Sunday night, which is very inconvenient to do that. We have youth coaches that are in their early or late teens, all the way up from the 30s, 40s, 50s. We even have youth coaches in their 60s. They don't care at all whether or not they relate. And at 60s, you know, they really got to work hard at kind of figuring out the culture and the dress, and they don't really care. Students don't really care all that much either because they know that they care about them as an individual. You know, we can invest with our time. We got a video that we put together from our youth coaches. We value them, the people that work with them. We wanted to hear you to hear from them, have a few things that they have to say. Go ahead and check it out.
I love the youth ministry just because I remember how much my youth leaders impacted me when I was in junior high, and I just want to impact these kids the same way I was, and it is tons of fun.
It's the best way I know to give back to the youth and my family and God.
Which one do I look at?
This might take me a couple turns. Because
it's nice to give back, and it's nice to, hopefully I can be one of those kids for the kids who they can look back and say that I was an influential person in their life.
I just love having the opportunity to have God use me as a tool just to interact with them.
Okay, look at, like, don't look at it.
How God's working through me to work through them, to work through the community and their high school.
I don't remember.
When you get to guide them and help them use their gifts to impact others, and that's the greatest experience ever.
And to help them with those struggles in school and in their home life.
I got into high school ministry so I could teach kids how to properly wear their clothes, you know, pull their pants up and wear the belt properly.
It's just real rewarding having the kids actually come to you and asking for advice. And
These girls that are 12 and 13 are just getting to know Jesus more and being excited about the Bible. That's been really cool.
They're just so fresh and new and ready to change the world. And I think that sometimes as we get older, we start to lose that.
I don't fully understand the question.
I'd take that out. Okay.
I not only joined and went to Bible college, that's not only, let me start over.
I like being in the youth ministry because I want to be there for the students just like leaders were there for me when I was their age.
That's hilarious.
There's nothing more exciting in the entire planet than to see a teenager
on fire for Christ.
And they're the up-and-coming church, so that's why I'm there. God needs me there.
All right, are we done?
Yeah.
All right.
Very cool. Those are our local heroes, constantly investing in our teens, and a lot of those youth coaches and people don't have kids of their own, and so they're investing in other people's kids. We begin to shape a generation when we invest in teens' lives. And thirdly and lastly, we shape a generation when we recognize that teens are fragile, that their lives are fragile. Psalm 34 says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." And I've had a few times in my life and in my career where I've been able to firsthand witness the brokenheartedness of students, the crushed spirit they've received. A couple of years ago, we had 4 weeks where four students died in this youth ministry at this church. Two of them were car accidents, one of them was a drug overdose, and the last one was a suicide. Reminders that life is fragile. Around that same time, we were finishing up with one of our high school services on Sunday night, and in the back of the room was a girl that looked like she needed to talk with somebody, and so I finished up what I was doing, and I moved towards where she was, and she said, "Yeah, I really need to talk with you. I've got something important to tell you." She wasn't really sure if she wanted to share it or not, but she ended up sharing. She said she wanted to keep it confidential, promised her that we couldn't do that, but we can promise her that we're going to do the best with that information. If parents need to know, parents need to know. If the law needs to know, the law needs to know. And she was pretty nervous about telling us this information. When we sat down and she started going through this this ordeal, what happened is 2 weeks prior, her and a friend were at AMC 30 watching a movie. It finished up. They're outside hanging out a little bit. And they saw some guys that they wanted to go talk to, so they went and talked to some guys. And this girl that's telling me the story says that her friend's mother was going to be taking her home, but she decided that she didn't want to go home with her. She wanted to stay with these guys and hang out with them a little bit longer because they said that they'd take her home. So the girl's friend went home with her mom, and she stayed there with these guys, and they said that they'd have no problem giving her a ride, even though she lived about 20, 25 miles outside of town. And so as they were heading out, they said that they needed to stop at their house first. They took her to their house, and they raped her. After that, they took her back to her house and dropped her off, and she had no way of getting a hold of them. She didn't have any of their information, didn't have their cell phones. She really didn't even know most of their names. She was telling me this information not because she wanted me to do something about it, even though I wanted to do something about it. She was telling me this information because she didn't feel like she had the right to live anymore. She felt partially responsible for making the decision to go home with these boys, which is obviously a dumb decision, but it's not her fault. It's nothing to blame, but she felt like she needed to end her life. She wanted to talk to me about that, and ultimately what she's saying is, "I don't want to end it, but I want to tell you that I'm really hurting." And so we convinced her to tell her parents, and we went to her neighborhood that night, about 10 o'clock at night. Me and Paul Wilson sat by a gas station curb for about an hour and a half, coaching her through it and walking her through the details and getting her to this place so that she can tell her parents. She's adamantly against telling her mom, and we couldn't figure out why she didn't want to tell her parents. I mean, this is something that everyone would want to know. Every parent would want to know this if this happened to their kids. Eventually, she gave in, said she would. So she walked us to her house. We walked through the front door, and there was no one home except for her mother. When we got into the kitchen, we started talking to her mom, and her mom was completely intoxicated. She was apathetic, to say the least. It's a reminder, life is fragile. Students are going through things that are tough. I want to go through one more illustration with you, if I could, with these boxes. There's a time in a person's life when they start to discover what they're all about, when they start figuring out what they're going to live their life for, what they're going to pursue, what they're going to spend their life doing. They want to figure those things out. A lot of times it happens in the teen years. You know, earlier on, they're protected by their parents, and they're underneath their parents, and they're following in whatever they're doing. They're kind of just tracking with them. But when you become a teenager, you start to distance yourself from that. You want to figure it out for yourself. You want to be your own person. And when they start doing that, they got to identify a few things. They got to identify first... Start with this one. They got to identify their identity. They got to identify their identity, what they're all about, who they are, and what they're standing for. They need that. I'm using a light bulb as a general illustration. And then they have purpose. Their purpose and what they're there for, what they're going to do, why they've been made, what's the reason to be alive, and their significance, if they have any, where that comes from, their security, and what they place that in. And then lastly, the biggest one is their faith, what they believe in, why they believe in anything at all, why their parents believe in things. That's why they start asking those questions that drive you crazy. And they're figuring out all those things. And at this teen years, it's at a time when obviously there's some struggles, there's some peer pressure, just the general wear and tear of teenage life. But then some events take place. They happen when we're older, they happen when we're younger. But this specific time in life, when they're going through these things and they're trying to identify what those things are, which obviously haven't been strengthened yet, their faith, their own identity, their own significance and security hasn't been strengthened quite yet. It's still riding on the coattails of their parents. But when they start to branch out and figure it out on their own, and those things haven't been solidified yet, then when the struggles come, when the storms hit and the hard things that happen in life take place, you can imagine what would happen when something happens in their life where their parents, they get divorced or separated, and then there's custody battles. And I don't mean to beat anybody up because we've made mistakes. I'm trying to illustrate for you the life of a teen and what they experience for this. Don't necessarily internalize it. This is something that the students are dealing with when their parents go through something like that. And obviously, it's fragile, and there's things that could potentially break inside of them, especially when it's things that are a little bit harder for them to deal with. Abuse. It could be sexual abuse. It could be physical abuse, drug abuse, alcohol. You know, then there's neglect. Sometimes they get neglected. Sometimes there's just things that naturally happen and they don't have any control over it. And you can imagine that those things can break a person because they're fragile and they're dealing with those things. And all the while, we assume that because the outer surface is okay, because it doesn't seem to be any damage, maybe they're dressing a little weird and the labels are still on there and they're performing okay at school, but internally, there's some things that have potentially broken. Internally, there's some things that have to be repaired, and I don't know when they're going to be repaired. Maybe it'll be a couple years. Maybe somebody can help them out a lot along the way. Maybe it'll be so far down the road that it'll never be repaired, but everything will look good on the surface. You know, I was reminded a couple of weeks ago when we were at our junior high camp, and we had a time in the night when the students could share their stories. So we had all the girls go in one part of the camp. Guys went in the other part of the camp, and they chose to be around the fire because most of them are pyros, and they want to, like, see and play with fire. And the girls are up in their place, and they're talking, and it's real quiet, and they're listening, and guys are kind of, like, throwing things and hitting stuff. And in this time, it was extremely impactful for me as a reminder. As students started to get up there and share their stories, the brokenness and the hurt and the pain that they're experiencing, it's completely unbearable. I couldn't imagine a teenager, and preteens, 11, 12, and 13, going through some of the things that I heard. You know, it was funny because the boys, they get up and they tell their stories. It takes like 12 seconds, and it's an incomplete sentence, and you're not really sure when to clap, and, you know, it's just a little awkward, but they bravely got up there and shared their stories. And I felt like the church at large needs to hear the guys and the girls and the stories that are existing, the hurt and the pain and the brokenness that exists between the students, not necessarily out in the world, but the students that belong to CCV, our sons and daughters that are here. So we put together this video. The students that are in the video are not the ones that dealt with the things. The things that were dealt with were recorded down and put on. So go ahead and watch this video. This is the current generation of teens that needs our example, need us to live godly lives, and need our investment, need us to pour our time and our resources and our lives into them. And they need us to understand how fragile their lives are. a stage and an age where we think that they are beyond hurt and pain, and they're not. And we need those things so that we can shape a generation who follows God relentlessly, who loves people graciously, and who stands up for truth uncompromisingly for Jesus. They used to say that it takes a village to raise a child, but the bottom line is it takes a church to shape a generation. Let's pray.